This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another jam-packed episode of The New World Next Week, of course, that you can find on NewWorldNextWeek.com. So much to get into, and we'll dive immediately into it. And of course, it's impossible to not cover the story of the WikiLeaks soap opera. However, we're going to try and avoid the soap opera parts, but I will give you the links in the show notes to follow everything from Operation Payback to the arrest of Julian Assange and all of those other little, as James and I have called it, soap opera points. But let's get to something that breaks it down a little more importantly, and that would be these WikiLeaks adventures possibly, probably being used to justify a Patriot Act legislation for the Internet, or an iPatriot Act. So we'll take it from activistpost.com. WikiLeaks is being used to bring in the agenda on so many levels, but most importantly by setting the precedent of shutting down websites for politically dangerous content. An article on beforeitsnews.com notes that, after all, if information is now the enemy, we must carefully police any and every aspect of this dangerous medium, all for the safety and protection of we the people. Oh, we still have the internet, just like you can still fly. You'll just have to be on the approved list, screened, stamped, zapped, mugged, and molested if you want to get on the net. No biggie. Thanks, Julian. Job well done. So, first, let's be clear. The 250,000 pages of cables amounted to some geopolitical Jerry Springer, he said, she said nonsense to make countries look petty and stupid. They revealed nothing new that wasn't already well known or well suspected. The information simply stoked existing flames by airing geopolitical dirty laundry, nothing more. No secret weapons, no major arms deals, no tactical locations of troops, and no revealing the IDs of secret agents, etc. Yet the government has used its corporate muscle to illegally limit access to WikiLeaks. It was recently revealed that Amazon, the server host for WikiLeaks, caved to political pressure to drop the website. Then, in dictatorial fashion, PayPal removed its service for donations to WikiLeaks, and now their bank account has been frozen. And all of this comes a week after the shutdown of 80-plus websites for copyright infringement, apparently in preparation for passing the blacklist bill. James, before I throw it back to you, of course, folks may remember we covered the shutdown of the websites last week on NewWorldNextWeek.com. And again, I'll just mention I'll provide a data dump of information so you can go through all the ups and downs and ins and outs of adventures in WikiLeaks. James?
All right. Well, first, I want to stress that absolutely this isn't about the WikiLeaks soap opera and all of the stuff associated with that, because I've seen that being used as a wedge issue recently, and people who agree on everything disagree on the point of whether or not WikiLeaks is a psyop or if it's controlled or whatever. And trust me, I've heard from a lot of people this week as well. And quite frankly, that's not the point right now. The point right now is that whatever WikiLeaks is and whatever their motivations are, the point is that it is now being used as the issue to bring us to the point where we're going to start seeing draconian new cybersecurity laws. So it doesn't matter what kind of excuse it is an excuse. So we have to stand on the side of people who are advocating internet freedom and the freedom to have these types of websites, and just look at the way that that this has gone down in full view of the 24/7 news media, which is covering this breathlessly. We've watched a man basically being hunted down, tracked down, and systematically taken off the grid by shutting down every possible access to funds, and just a remarkable manhunt that has taken out a place in full view. And now we move into the next stage of the operation, and we see what kinds of laws they can pass to limit free speech, and to perhaps even go even further with cybersecurity. So once again, we have to stand on the side of internet freedoms. And I'm not sure that something like Operation Payback is the answer, because I think that ultimately plays into the narrative by giving them an excuse to strike back even harder. But James, maybe what's your take on this, and how do you think we go about, I don't know, reversing the tide?
I honestly don't have the answer to that. But yeah, of course, when you tie in attacking MasterCard and you get into the banksters and the rumors of Bank of America documents coming very soon, when you tie in computer and IT infrastructure to the banks, to internet freedom, these are all the specters that you and I and many, many, many others have talked about for the last couple of years. It's being used to crack down on the web. The last thing I do want to mention is a big thanks to BrassCheckTV.com. they reposted, James, our WikiLeaks coverage from back in July with the simple headline of "These guys nailed it back in July." And that has given this video that we called WikiLeaks plus mainstream media hype equals question mark now in excess of 30,000 plus views, and it's now become easily our most watched New World Next Week video. And again, we'll implore folks to again share and comment and spread this information around.
Right, and I just hope that we can find a way to counteract what's going on right now and to stand on the side of internet freedoms, because as I don't think this is the incident that will bring in the cyber the iPatriot Act that we've talked about before, but I think it's going to be a series of incidents, just like it was a series of incidents that introduced people to the idea of the Patriot Act, leading from Oklahoma to the African embassy bombings to the USS Cole and the rise of Osama bin Laden as the boogeyman, and then 9/11, and then the Patriot Act. I think this is maybe just the first step in a series of steps that will lead to the new iPatriot Act.
And again, it's not like they'll write it after something happens. They're ready and waiting to take it off the shelf.
That's it. So, James, right. Absolutely.
Let's move to our second story, which is also of massive importance, and we'll take it from the European press before we extrapolate back to here in the States. From Deutsche Welle, scheme to create a run on the global banking system fails. Ex-soccer star Eric Cantona's plan for people to withdraw all their money from banks has failed. By the time French banks closed on Tuesday, very few appeared to have followed his call. Tens of thousands of people heard the call by former French footballer Eric Cantona to bring down the banking system that sparked the global economic crisis, but few acted on it Tuesday, the day Cantona suggested his anti-capitalist revolution should begin. The protests were few, isolated, and largely symbolic. One group of activists in Paris emptied their bank accounts from a branch of Societe Generale and opened accounts at the nearby branch of a cooperative bank. But in general, it was business as usual in France's banking institutions. Cantona, now a successful actor and an icon to many, had appealed to people to withdraw their money from the banks in an attempt to punish the corrupt criminal banking system. And he said, quote, "The 3 million people in the streets, they go to the bank, withdraw their money, and the banks collapse. That's a real threat. There's a real revolution," end quote, the ex-footballer said in an online video watched by tens of thousands of people in France and beyond. James, this then relates to here in the States. So December 7th was called for this bank run day in Europe, and I believe December 11th is what's being called here in the States, Silver Bullet Day. And this is a story we didn't get to cover while we were on a break from New World Next Week, and that's killing J.P. Morgan with silver bullets. And again, we'll give folks all the links to flesh all of this out. We can't get into all the minutiae right here. But essentially, J.P. Morgan is short on silver, and if we buy a bunch of silver, we could hurt them very seriously. James?
Right, exactly. And now it looks like J.P. Morgan is trying to corner the silver market to cover their shorts, and that's going to just drive up the price of silver. So it's win-win-win-win for anyone who's actually buying physical silver right now, because it's only going up and it's a good store of value. So, and it's something that everyone can afford, unlike gold, which is obviously a lot pricier. So it's a great way of fighting back against the system, using its own tools against it, which is a smart way of fighting back. And the French idea of taking money out of the banks didn't work, but again, that's just the first round in what's going to be a multi-round fight. And anyone who thinks that they're going to get the knockout punch on the first blow is not in the fight for the right reasons and not thinking the right way. We have to keep at it, and we have to build momentum so that we're eventually working on a massive scale and really having an effect. And I see all of these things as positive signs. It's just a question of, are we going fast enough, or is the tyranny coming at us hard enough, and who's going to budge first, I guess.
And even if ultimately this doesn't take down J.P. Morgan, I've also thought, it's like, well, this is a great way just to get into buying precious metals, which I haven't to this point.
Right. Again, it's a good store of value, and there's nothing wrong with holding that, because it does. I mean, ultimately, it just bolsters your ability to survive in the future. So there's no possible downside to this.
Yeah, it's not going to expire like food or anything.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So again, it's a simple and effective way of fighting back against what the banking tyranny itself. And hopefully, you know, maybe we can affect a massive change like taking down J.P. Morgan. But even if we don't, we're still going to win in the end.
Absolutely. So, James, why don't you take us into our third and final story this week?
All right. Well, as I announced recently, I am releasing a new DVD called the 2009 Video Archive, which is just a collection of videos that I've recorded for the Corbett Report in 2009, interviews with numerous people, the head of the Hiroshima Peace Institute, 9/11 victims' family members, the globalresearch.ca webmaster, Michelle Chasadovsky, lots of different people on a wide range of subjects. But one of the things that's in this DVD is a 30-minute conversation that you and I recorded at the beginning of this year, back in early January of 2010. We recorded a conversation that we called the Top Censored Stories of 2009. And basically, we're taking our cue from projectcensored.org, which every year puts out its top censored news stories of stories that didn't get enough mainstream media coverage despite their incredible importance. And so you and I had a 30-minute conversation on this that I've put on this DVD that no one has seen before. So it's all new footage and material. But basically, you and I selected the top three stories that each of us thought was the top censored stories of 2009, and we had a back-and-forth conversation about it. It's pretty wide-ranging and pretty interesting to look back on, especially at this point now, almost a year later. So right now, instead of covering a third story, I'd like to just show the first story from that conversation. So let's go to the clip. So, James, I don't have any idea what stories you've selected, so why don't we get into your first story? What was the first one that you've selected for the year 2009?
The first story that I've selected, I think, goes to the start of one of my newer websites. In addition to MediaMonarchy.com, I started almost a year ago FoodWorldOrder.com, as we realized that the food situation was becoming more and more important as the days went by. And the thing that solidified it for me, because we could talk about GMOs and Monsanto and all of these other massively important things, but my story is essentially the one that comes out of your tap, and that's the tons of released drugs tainting the U.S. water. Other reports, millions in U.S. drink dirty water. The stories came out over the year. The initial story that I'm sourcing here is an Associated Press investigative report, Tons of Released Drugs Taint U.S. Water, and I'll just read the first quick paragraph here. U.S. manufacturers, including major drug makers, have legally released at least 271 million pounds of pharmaceuticals into waterways that often provide drinking water, contamination the federal government has consistently overlooked, according to an Associated Press investigation. This, James, is something, you know, that we did cover recently on the New World Next Week when the report about millions in U.S. drink dirty water, and that was a New York Times investigative report. This speaks to me and what we talk about a lot of times with the climate gate or climate control. All the attention is given to man-made global warming. So the idea that paying carbon indulgences to the same finance oligarchs is somehow going to help these environmental problems is such a huge misdirection. And they don't want us thinking about the GMOs or literally the drugs and the poison or the rocket fuel or the weed killer that's in our drinking water.
Okay, once again, that is from the 2009 Video Archive, and it will be available from CorbettReport.com, but also from MediaMonarchy.com, because I'm going to be shipping James a bunch of DVDs as soon as the DVD is physically ready to ship, which should be in the next couple of days. So please keep your eyes peeled for that, and trust me, there will be more on CorbettReport.com about that, and James can tell you about how you can get copies from him as well. All right, James, I think that's it for this week.
I think so. There's so much, but we're going to have to draw it to a close.
We are. All right. Well, that's it. So thank you again for all your help.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care.